This week, we're in awe of one actor's performance. We say hello to some older actors again. And we say goodbye to our beloved Viserys. Welcome to Bastards and Broken Things. Yes, yes, hello to all the lovely lords and ladies of the realm. I am, of course, your host, Sir Len. And joining me this week is one of the fiercest ladies of the realm, not constrained by draconian times they live in. They rise above and deliver noble and true accounts of each week's episode. It's Lady Baron.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for that rousing introduction.
Very rousing. Very rousing. Some would say as rousing as a certain few speeches in this episode. But we'll get on to that, won't we?
Don't set yourself up for failure that soon.
Yeah, that's true. Well, in talking about failure, nah, I'm joking. I wanna thank Bronze John for hosting for me last week. I think he did a fantastic job. He reminded me a bit, Lucy, of Jon Snow, you know. I said, you're going to have to be king. And he said, I don't want it. And I, you know, but, you know, like Jon Snow, he served the realm honourably.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. He knows nothing, but, you know, he gave it a good go.
Oh, that was good, actually.
Just like Jon Snow.
Yeah. No, very good. John, thank you for hosting last week. I think you did a bang up, fantastic job, you and Emma, covering episode 7, which ended up being bit of a mad episode, really, where I think off mic, me and Gareth gave it a 5. Lucy, you gave it a 4, I believe. So overall, we felt it was the best episode of the season. Emma actually gave it a 5 as well. How are you doing, Lucy? You okay?
I'm okay, yes. I've had my own Viserys-like illness. Always ill.
Jesus.
Which is why I couldn't feature quite last minute. Last week, it was basically like being hungover for a week. But I wasn't hungover, but I just had the sort of rank feeling. Didn't lose an eye or an arm, so not quite Viserys level, but yeah, not great. But I'm back and I'm feeling better and I'm ready to chat about the dragon show.
Chat about the dragon show, an episode which featured no dragons.
No dragons.
Although that's actually not a bad thing, in my opinion. I think, you know, there's going to be plenty of that coming up in season 2, so just everyone chill out, okay? It's not a problem that we didn't see much dragons. Of course, we're here this week to talk about episode 8, titled Lord of the Tides, obviously referring to Lord Crawley's and his seat on Driftmark and who would succeed him as Lord of the Tides, because, of course, the little bloody Crawley's got injured, didn't he?
Off-screen.
Off-screen, which is very interesting, but I kind of like it in a way. So what did we think of this week's episode? I'm going to go first, Lucy.
Okay.
I'm going to go first because that's the order I've written in my notes.
It is your right as host to choose who goes when. So
thanks.
Continue.
Cheers. Yeah, good. I have talked about this on the hot take with Gareth because obviously we do a hot take after every episode and me and Gareth give you our unsullied, unresearched, and, you know, first time viewing thoughts. And we both agreed that this was the best episode of the season. For several reasons, we fell down on that. And I think it's Gaz put it in a way that he said the show has come to life. And that's not to say that it wasn't good or even great, because if you actually look at our track record, we'd pretty much consistently given every episode 4 blueberries, you know, as the season has gone on. Now, it was missing a little something, a little je ne sais quoi, because there were moments where I was like, is there going to be like some 5 blueberry episodes in here? I don't feel attached to the characters enough. The time jumps aren't helping with that situation. Yeah. because we don't feel, you know, like we're as invested or emotionally connected to the characters. But I mean, this episode, to put it in one way, had me almost in tears twice. And at scenes that I just thought things that would never, ever get me feeling that way. And in great part, that's thanks to a fantastic performance from, and you always correct me on this, Lucy, because I get it wrong every time, Paddy Considine. Is that just right?
Paddy Considine.
Considine.
Well, I think you can say Considine, but you always say Constantine. But I think the people know who you mean.
Different character.
But yes. Now you've got me doubting how I say it in my mind. I'm like, what do I say?
Yes. You're supposed to be the Paddy expert.
Paddy Considine, that's what I would say.
He's been a total rock this season. He has been the one constant, I would say, that has really united us as a podcast. I think across all of us, I think he has been our favourite character predominantly. And, you know, his interpretation of Viserys compared to that of the book is just... he's just elevated the character. I even mentioned to Gaz in the hot take that George has even said that, like, Paddy's done an unbelievable job. Like, George said this about, and this is a bit of a weird one, but George said this about Shay in the show compared to his written version of Shay. And he said the same thing about Paddy. He said that he's completely changed the way he looks at that character, and he wrote that character. So that's quite interesting. You know, I thought his last moments here were just jaw-dropping. And it wasn't an action-packed episode, but we had a bit of a, you know, action-y type one last week, I feel personally, with, like, you know, the standoff and stuff in the Hall of Driftmark and Vhagar being, you know, tamed, as it were. I just thought this was excellently constructed, and it had very emotional moments and tension throughout. It was heartbreaking to watch at times, and I couldn't take my eyes off it, Lucy. So I genuinely believe that this is the best episode of the season so far, and I'm going to give it 5 whole blueberries, delicious ones, out of the fridge.
5 out of 5, again.
Yeah. Gaz would give it the same, but he's not here. So I honour him. My trusty squire is out fetching me more wine. And to do that, he's had to go all the way to Dawn. Yeah? So he'll be back next week. So don't worry about that. Okay? But he gives it 5 as well.
Ship him back in.
What do you reckon then?
Agree with basically everything you've said. I think your sentiments are sound.
Sound of mind.
I'd give it four blueberries. Purely because for me... the time jumps again are losing aspects of the quality of it for me. The aging of the children takes me out of the action because I'm thinking, well, he looks older than him, but he looks much older than that kid, doesn't look much older than the other kid. It's making keeping track of certain characters confusing. I think the Velaryons, the daughters, I'm like, I don't know who that is when they're talking about different
Rhaena
names.
And Baela. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know. I can't really recognise them. There was a scene with, is it Rhaenys? Who I think she's a fantastic actress. But when they were talking about people, I was like, oh, I'm losing who this is. We'll talk about it a bit later, I'm sure. But you're just losing character development for quite big characters, I think. Because it's like 6 years later, okay, Rhaenyra's just pregnant again. I thought she didn't want to be someone that's just popping out airs. And... now she's just mum. It's like protective mum. That's just her character, which I think loses some of the characterization that we got in the previous iteration in the first 5 episodes. I think that you see a softening of Alicent, which is interesting if it's genuine, but I just think, where's that come from? Because we haven't seen it. Last episode, she was absolutely such a fucking bitch. And now you can kind of see that she's turned away from that. And it just, that makes it feel a bit more rushed. But everything you've said that was good about the episode, I agree with. Those little things took me out of it. And I have to say, I shared it on our WhatsApp group that I'd seen a tweet beforehand that basically, it was such a hyperbolic tweet. that made out that this was basically Battle of the Bastards. Like, it was the best thing, some of the best 63 minutes of TV ever shown, like all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God. And I have to admit, for some reason, that made me think dragons. I was like, this is going to be fucking dragon okay. showdown.
Okay.
And when it was actually quite a quiet, low-key episode in comparison to maybe the previous one, I thought, oh, what's that? Why? Like, yeah, it's not the show's fault that I saw a tweet that made me have heightened expectations.
No, it's definitely the show's fault. Unbelievable. For
blame
them.
The writers.
They made you go on Twitter. It's I think
the guy, I think whoever tweeted was a bit of a like corporate shill for HBO. So, but anyway, no, it had really strong moments. You know, I hope we can devote a proper segment to Viserys and Paddy, because I think his performance was like this little seam of gold running through the whole show. And I've always been a very staunchly pro Viserys. I loved his character from the start, and he's kind of what kept me going when sometimes it was a bit flat. So I hope we can go into his performance a little bit more. But yeah, I thought it was a good episode.
Oh, we will.
And it set it up. But I feel like every episode is like, ah, oh, that sets it up, and then nothing really happens. You're like, oh, this is it. This is going to really set it up. I think this is it now. This really is going to set it up for the...
if this one doesn't set it up,
what
then
will?
I'll tell you something. What fucking will?
Maybe it's not going to be set up. But yeah, no, it was a very good episode. Like, I think the time hops for me, just...
Let's do the time hop again.
No, let's not. Let's leave it. I'm hoping they're not going to do that anymore, right? These are going to be the actors we've got.
You don't know.
She's not going to pop up pregnant again, like...
Guys, she doesn't know. She doesn't know about the next time jump. Coming in next episode. No,
8 years later.
Not,
oh my God.
There's not unbelievable.
I'll,
imagine
I'll
that.
I'll sue. I'll quit.
Hey, here's this really cool actor for Aemond. And now he's 75 years old. The Dance of the Dragons happened. The end.
Off screen.
I think this season, and I've said this before, thank you for your thoughts, Lucy. I think this season, and I've said this before, is because this is a prologue. Now, it does happen in the book that you get these time jumps. 1 minute you're in 124 AC, so 124 years after Aegon's conquest. And then the next chapter's like, in the years that passed, this happened. In the year 129 AC, so you just...
I do get it. Like,
there's just 5 years.
The text
years
is obviously... It, as you say, it's more of a sort of collection of
encyclopedic
events.
Encyclopedic.
Yeah. So they have to pad it out.
Accounts.
And
yeah.
I actually think, generally speaking, it's been done well, but there's just nuances that are lost. And also some actors have aged loads, and then others are just like, you're exactly the same. And it's stuff like that. Maybe you should just ignore it. But I go, oh, well, that one's that old, and that one hasn't aged at all. And then I'm not watching the show because I'm thinking about the lack of aging. Whereas Viserys has disintegrated into, like, the corpse bride. Well, the corpse king.
Zombu.
Whereas
zombie.
Daemon is just like, no, I'm still
Daemon's,
exactly the
Daemon's
same.
Daemon's looking better than ever.
Yeah, he's glowing. Better than ever. Jesus. My God. Drop your skincare routine, hon, because you're looking better than ever.
You're looking fine, son.
Yeah, I won't go that far.
I will say that, I agree with the time jumps. I think we're just not used to it because Game of Thrones obviously takes the War of the Five Kings, whatever, takes place over like four or five years in that many seasons. You know, George originally toyed with the idea of having a huge time jump after Storm of Swords, and then it would be like 5 years later for Feast and Dance. Because obviously it's sort of a split book, but he never went through with it because he felt it was too much. You know what I mean? Just to be time jumping.
But can you? I'm wondering. Can you think of any other shows where within a season it moves around time so much? I'm not saying that in a rude way. I'm just saying, is there a precedent for it? Because maybe that's why it makes me so sort of discombobulated. Because it's not something you normally see over like 10 seasons.
I'm all discombobulated.
That is
I actually
me.
Can't
watch it. Yeah, so maybe that's...
I can't think of...
Maybe people
like that,
don't
really.
Do it because it doesn't always work that well. But.
Yeah, I genuinely think if the show's actually done a very good job considering the time jumps when you've just said it like that,
yeah.
Like, think about how the episode still made us really like emotional, made us care, even though they had these time jumps, which isn't, you know, something that really usually ties you or binds you to the characters that you're watching. So yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. But anyway, let's have a quick little advert and then we'll jump into the plot of episode 8, The Lord of the Tides. Hello there. Yes, quick advert just to say this season, the support from you lovely listeners has been amazing. We've got lots of new Patreons, you know, loads of new subscribers, and that's absolutely fantastic. So thank you very much. Of course, if you do want to subscribe, that's fantastic. If you want to write in, you can write into us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, like I said there with the lovely Patreons, you can support us further by going to patreon.com/fancritical and donating some money to us monthly. You don't have to do much at all. You get some access to some bonus content, and you also just join the lovely club that supports us making podcasts for you. Because as I've said before, this isn't our main job. This isn't, believe it or not, we are not professional podcasters. Not many people are in the world, because there's only a very, very select few people who can do this as a full-time job. So anything that you donate to us is hugely appreciated. Isn't that right, Lucy?
Yes, massively. It makes us feel loved, and it also feeds us.
Yeah, the love.
So emotionally and physically, because we, you know, cost of living crisis, it ain't no joke. So keep it coming.
It ain't no joke, son.
But definitely worth you spending your money, your hard-earned money, to feed us.
Yes.
Desperate podcasters.
Think about poor little Gareth.
Yeah.
Think about him, all right? If I were to describe Gareth to you, he is tiny, minuscule, wasting away before our very eyes.
He would describe himself as average height, but yes, continue, Len.
Yeah. So just think about that. Just picture that. Picture a weak little fella, and you see him, and he's getting bullied by us all the time.
You.
Right? That's the other thing. Well, all of us. So, yeah. So just think about him, and then think, bloody hell, he needs some help. And then go to patreon.com/fancritical, okay? Yes. Thank you, lovely listeners.
Donate to the bullies. Donate to the people bullying Gaz to help him.
Yeah, do that. Do that. All right, let's jump into the plot of episode 8.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, Luce, we talked about these time jumps, but here we go. My first note is 6 years on from the
straight
events
away
in episode 7. The House Velaryon succession is threatened when Lord Corlys is severely wounded in the Stepstones, which, of course, is a resurgent battle because the Triarchy are back. They're back, baby.
Back at it again.
Back at it again. But we don't need to see any more crab people, so it's kind of good in a way. And the scene opens with Rhaenys sitting on the throne, the Driftwood throne, and defending Lord Corlys' decision that Lucerys, Velaryon, Rhaenyra's second son, should inherit Driftmark. You also see here that Baela, the one you don't really remember, is her granddaughter. So that's Daemon and Laena's twins, Baela and Rhaena. You see Baela is here and she is a ward. So that's also interesting to note. That
always
that
ends
she's
well.
With her grandmother. Yeah. Yeah. Usually being a ward is a form of... No, that's not true.
Hostage.
I was about to say a form of punishment.
Well,
it's like
it's
a hostage.
Punishment for the other family, isn't it? It's if you do anything wrong, we have your child.
That's right.
Bear
that's
that in
right.
mind.
But they are still raised as like essentially befits someone of their status.
Yeah.
If you remember, one of the most famous wards in the Song of Ice and Fire story is Theon, Theon Greyjoy, who is a ward of Ned Stark, because the Greyjoys rose up, tried a rebellion, and then got absolutely decimated by Robert, Ned, all of that lot. So it's interesting to note here that Lucerys inherits the Driftwood throne because Jacerys is the Prince of Dragonstone, which means he is the heir to the Iron Throne. So it passes over him and goes straight to Lucerys. Yeah?
Yep. Second son. Another second son.
Second son. Yeah, there's a lot of kids. So, dear listeners, if you are struggling, it's okay.
I struggle.
There's fucking loads. I can't believe how many of the kids they've kept in the show from the book. In fact, I think they've only cut one, right? Which is kind of mad when you think about it.
Who they
could
they
have really
cut?
Streamed. Darren. It's Darian.
Darren.
Darian. Okay, Darian is better. The way I should pronounce it. He is the fourth son of Alicent. So Alicent has, no, the third son of Alicent and is her fourth child. So she has three children in the show. She's got Aegon the second, Aemond, Eyepatch Aemond. She's got Helena, the dreamer. And then she also has a younger son called Darian, who is quite cool in the books, but they've got rid of him. So it's what it is. It's actually Lord Corlys's brother, Sir Vaemond Velaryon, that is petitioning King's Landing to be named Lord Corlys's heir, proclaiming Lucerys is illegitimate and saying that now a queen rules the Seven Kingdoms.
I mean, it's kind of true.
I did ask last week. I asked John and I asked this to Emma. I wasn't on, obviously, but I did message them. And I said, do you think we're going to see anyone get their tongues cut out? Because obviously last week we had, you know, Viserys claiming that anyone who mentions the illegitimacy of his grandkids, would be have their tongue cut out. What you know?
It's treason.
Did you think we were going to see something like that this episode, Lucy? Is that what you thought would happen?
You know what? I did, but not actually to do with the treasonous naming of the bastards. I thought, we are jumping ahead, but you asked me, so I'm going to tell you. I thought Alicent was going to have Diana's tongue cut out by, what's that creepy little guy, Linus. Is that his name?
Laris.
I thought he was going to sidle out with his little scissors, but I'm glad he didn't. So,
Scissor Man. Sasquatch. We call him Sasquatch on this podcast.
Bigfoot.
Talking about that then, we see that Alicent is getting informed, and she is the queen that is now ruling the Seven Kingdoms, by the way.
Queen
but
Regent.
We see that Queen Regent, yeah, essentially her and Otto are making decisions for the crown, because we'll see in a bit that Viserys is fucked. But we see her getting informed that her son Aegon has been essentially raping servant girls. And we see in this scene, she gives her some gold and what appears to be moon tea. Now, this is interesting. And I want to know where you fall down on this. Do we think that this is actually poison and not moon tea?
Poison is a woman's weapon, as we know.
Oh, that's what the men say in this world.
But I don't see why she'd give her gold and then poison her. She could just go, drink this, and then she's dead. I don't think it's poison. I think it's moon tea, and I think...
Yeah.
I don't think she's really got the guts for anything like that. And good, because I was worried that she was going to do something awful. But I don't think Alicent is actually particularly built like that. She's not Cersei. She's, I don't think, well, I mean, this is me watching it. Stop giving things away by saying, well.
No, I'm not giving away.
Wait till you see. Civil War.
Wait till you see this.
Stop talking about Civil War. Giving it away. I don't think she's got the ruthlessness. And I also think she fucking hates Aegon. I think she's like,
she does.
I don't think she wants him to be king, really, like as in at this point in the show that we're talking about. And she's disgusted by him. So I actually don't think she would be like, well, I'm going to kill the people you're raping. Like, I actually don't think she's got that side to her.
Yeah. I thought it's very open to interpretation. I thought the gold was potentially like, you know, making an animal, like when you make an animal feel okay before you slit its throat. Because I think it's very interesting. I think it's very interesting. She might be that ruthless. She might be, genuinely.
She might, that's the thing. The last episode, I would say, yeah, she's calling for a fucking kid's eye. Like, she's gone absolutely exactly. nuts. And then 6 years later, all that rage is gone. We don't know where it's gone. She just seems a bit calmer. She's maybe settled into the role of being Queen Regent. And I do think she's got a lot of distaste for her son and his proclivities. But you're not wrong that yep. it could be poison. It's something I didn't consider. But yeah, it checks out. It was the weapon of the woman.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I just read some stuff online where people were questioning it. I genuinely questioned it when I watched it because it just felt off to me. Something about it felt off.
It was a scene where I was expecting something awful to happen to the girl. And I was like, oh dear. So maybe that feeling was because, it was poison.
Let's talk about Aegon. Aegon the Second. Obviously, the first was Aegon the Conqueror. Mm. Hugely successful individual in terms of Westerosi history. And also the Targaryen dynasty.
Very entrepreneurial spirit, that Aegon, yes.
He forged his own path.
Influential figure.
This Aegon... Oh my God, he is a fucking loser and a horrible, horrible person.
Yes.
In the books, he is also a massive drunk who does this to the serving girls. He's a total prick, basically. And he sinks into his cups whenever there's issues or, you know, anything going on. He just gets pissed. So it's good to see they've kept that. We see that Alicent is wearing the seven-pointed star.
Yes.
Affirming her and the Hightower's affiliation with the new gods. What do you reckon to that?
We do not recognise the new gods. I worship the old gods.
Lucy, here's a question for you, because I think this sort of missed or was quite swept under the carpet by the episode, and I've heard a lot of people not realise this. Do you know who Aegon is married to?
His sister.
Correct. Helena.
Yes.
Targaryen.
That was... Well, I didn't know if they were actually... married, but I know they were betrothed in previous episodes.
Well, here's this. Do you know they've got three kids?
Well, at this point?
Yeah. Genuinely.
Stupid. Okay. No, I didn't know that.
So they've got three kids. And the only reason you'd know that in this episode is because Helena walks in and goes, where's that serving girl that's supposed to be dressing the children?
Actually, yeah, I do remember that. And I just didn't clock that, yes, this would be their children. That's on me. Okay.
No, it's not on you. It's not on you. I think the show has not really shown them yet, and hopefully it will next week. You have, they've got two twins, Jaehaerys and Jaehaera.
Not a twins.
And they also...
Not a twins going down.
Yeah. And also, there's also twins in this episode, which is interesting. And Maelor is the other kid. Just talking on that twin thing, Lucy, because I haven't actually written it in my notes, but it's good to know that you noticed the twins in the Kingsguard. There's a very interesting story with them, but do you know what their names are?
No, so the twins I meant are Rhaenyra's and Daemon's twins. Are they not twins?
They're not twins.
They look exactly the same age to me.
Yeah.
Oh, I spoiled your little story. Go ahead.
No, you haven't. So you remember when Alicent gets informed? She's like, oh, Sir Eric.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I'm Eric, Your Grace.
Yeah. I thought she was just saying the wrong word.
Two twins in the Kingsguard, Sir Eric and Sir Eric. Good luck with that.
They both got long hair.
And beards.
A bit unusual. A bit Viking.
Yeah, so that's something to look out for later in the show.
Tidbit.
Let's kick on. Rhaenyra and Daemon and their children return to the capital to defend Lucerys' claim. They find Viserys bedridden and disfigured.
Sad.
Sad, isn't it?
Going out sad.
This is like me hungover in the morning. I said this in a hot take. Like this, the way Viserys looks is how I feel sometimes. Yeah,
that's
genuinely
how I felt last week. Just like deprived of life. Blood.
His like breathing is so like fucked up in this episode. Like, you know, the sound design was actually very good.
His teeth. And he had little golem hands. Like, I feel like his hands were CGI. Aww. They were so skinny and spindly.
Jesus. I'll tell you what, it better be CGI later when you see him getting his leechings done or whatever, because he's skinny as fuck. Jesus. Crazy to think, Lucy, he's only 55.
Who, Viserys? Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yep.
I saw something on Twitter, which I think now I think can't be right, that said Kristen is supposed to only be like 5 years younger than Viserys. Is that incorrect?
Oh, God. Now you're really testing me.
Consider the time jumps and where he hasn't aged a day.
No, I think he's like 40 or something. I don't know.
What, at this point?
Sorry, listeners.
Sorry.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
Right, okay.
Rhaenyra is like 33 at this point or something. So
okay, so he was always a bit older than her.
Stop asking me about ages, because then people are going to write in and they're going to be like, "Oh, Len was wrong. She's actually 34," and I'm like, oh, "For fuck's sake!"
This is what concerns me when I watch it. I'm like, "How old approximately are they?"
You're like, "Let's get Len in trouble. Yeah. Let's ask him all these specific
put
dates.
Put him on the spot,
so he can look like a fucking moron, and then we'll kick on."
No.
Okay, so this was interesting. Obviously, Viserys, bless him. We'll talk about his performance in a bit, because we'll talk about that when we talk about the throne room scene. But man, he's not looking good. He's not looking Copus Mentis. This is where we begin to see just how tragic his life is, to be honest. does Daemon suspect that his tea is being slowly poisoned, potentially?
Definitely, and it is. I think
if
you look
as
at
well.
His teeth,
look at the state of him.
They're
for
so
fuck's
rotten
sake.
Because I think he's constantly absorbing things that are just not good for his teeth either. Like the milk of the poppy is like rotting his teeth, and I think he's getting
it's
more.
Like coffee.
Yeah, he's getting more than he needs to, and that's why he's deteriorated. I mean, he's always, you know, on his way out, but yeah, shouldn't really still be alive and look like that. That shouldn't really be possible.
Yeah, there is a suspicion in the books that his tea is slowly being poisoned, or at least something is potentially in his tea. Rumour and hearsay.
Rumour has
it. And sort of debunked by the guy who's writing the book, the maester who is writing the book. They introduce their children. So Rhaenyra and Daemon now have children. The ones that you thought were twins.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're not twins.
I'm going to ask you how old they are. How old are they,
oh,
Len?
Fucking hell. There's Aegon the Younger, and he's called Aegon the Younger because we've obviously got the other Aegon.
That was a stupid decision. I mean, really was.
Well,
looking at it, but
huge decision. Huge decision because. And I said this to Gareth in the hot take, and we'll talk about it now. In the book, this is a huge point of contention for Alicent really despising Rhaenyra.
Mm.
Because the moment that her and Daemon have a child, they call it Aegon, obviously as a slight to her calling her firstborn son with Viserys as Aegon. So you have this situation where you've got Aegon the Second and Aegon the Younger, or Aegon the Older and Aegon the Younger. And it's a huge issue for Alicent. She fucking hates Rhaenyra for doing that.
Yeah.
Right? So you say it's a weird decision. It's actually very calculated by Rhaenyra to belittle her Aegon. You know, she believes that, you know,
this is the heir Aegon. Yeah. Although it's not really, is it?
He's not even an heir.
They have about eight kids.
But he's the purest blood, you know what I mean? So it's interesting. And the other one is called Viserys, and I thought that was quite sweet because he's like, oh, he'll make a fight. That's a king's name.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. It's nice, isn't it?
He loves his grandchildren like so much more than he loves his other kids, like his
actual
sons.
Kids.
He just cannot stand them. He cannot even bear to think about them, but he loves his little grandkids. Oh. I love Viserys.
It's kind of like, you know, when you're naming, you know, like if you do know, you're about to have a kid and then
I've had
all these baby names planned.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got these baby names planned and then someone just gives birth just before you and then they're like, oh, you take your name.
And yeah, it is that thing of, oh, can you really have the same name as someone in your kind of social circle? And I mean, yeah, you can, but it could be awkward. And this turns out to be quite a bad decision. We shall see.
When Vaemond Velaryon reaches the Red Keep, Rhaenyra proposes an arrangement to gain Princess Rhaenys' support. She also implores Viserys to defend her succession, quoting Aegon the Conqueror's dream. So I thought the scene where she was like pleading with him when he's basically in this dream state, while there's like a storm lashing outside, I thought that was quite like powerful.
It was quite uncomfortable because it's like, your dad's really ill, and as much as this is really important, Ill. You're just like, can you wake up? Hello, remember to say this. Remember what was said about Lucerys. Your eyes have rolled back into your head. No, listen. It's like, oh, it's like, give him a moment, for pity's sake.
Yeah, good. Quote there, Boromir.
Always Boromir. Different show.
Always Boromir. A different show, different time. I think this next scene is unbelievable. Now, there are not many shows or instances where I would think an old man walking or hobbling, staggering, if you will, toward from like point A to point B would make me cry. Didn't think that would happen. Unless you're watching like Up or something, because that really gets me every time. Yeah.
What about in Pearl Harbor when
fuck that film, Lucy.
Roosevelt,
terrible,
gets out of his wheelchair and goes and starts walking. He goes, don't tell me it can't be done. So yeah, it's pretty much the same.
That film is an abomination.
Yeah, so good.
Sorry. I mean, I just think that film was terrible.
Of course, everybody
anyway.
Does. I was just...
Okay, good.
Taking the piss.
Maybe put it on a sort of, how the fuck have you not seen that? Or we have all seen it. But I bet John hasn't seen it or something. So, yeah, basically the moment of them all at court pleading to Otto, who's sitting in the chair as Hand of the King, as ruling regent in a way, giving their cases for who should rule Driftmark and become Lord of the Tides, control the Valyrian fleet. And, you know, this isn't just a bit of historical context. This seat being the Lord of Driftmark and the Valyrians is hugely significant to war. Okay? Because they have the biggest fleet in the realm, right? And as we know, ships are extremely important in the world of you know, Planetos, Essos and Westeros, and A Song of Ice and Fire. So whoever, you know, if Vaemond were to become the Lord, he is basically pledging his allegiance to the Hightowers,
mm-hmm.
you know? Huge. Rhaenyra and Daemon would be fucked. They would have no sea power at all. So this is interesting. Just when you think Rhaenyra's cause is lost, the doors open and Viserys makes that heroic stride towards the throne. Yeah, like I said, the music was fantastic. Did you like the scene, Luce? I thought it was so touching.
Yes. I mean, I'm not a royalist. I don't think we should have a royal family. But when I saw Otto on that fucking throne and Viserys came in, I was like, fuck off that throne, mate. The king is here.
Yeah.
This is where he sits.
Get fucking off of it.
Yeah, I felt very, come on. We need a ruling class in this country being Westeros, not England. Yeah, I thought that was very moving. You know, he did it for his daughter. He loves her. And if that was to be his last stand, you know, so be it. And you could tell he's even annoyed. Like, why are you doing this without me? Like, yeah, this is still my seat. I still have a final say. Why are we still talking about this? Again, I'll tell you, this is how it's going to be. Viserys is going to be the heir to the Driftmark throne. I found it quite moving when Damon was the one to help him back up and put his crown, yeah. put his crown back on his head.
Do you want to hear an interesting fact about that, Liz?
I think I already know it, but tell the audience.
Improvised.
Yeah.
It's improvised. Yeah. So the crown fell off when they were shooting, and Matt Smith just went and grabbed it and put it on Viserys' head, and they were like, fuck me, that's good.
Mm.
So they kept it in.
Keep that.
Because it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, keep that. It was, you think about how many times they've, well, essentially, Viserys has banished Daemon twice in this very throne room. He's had a dagger to his throat at one point.
Yeah. You know? He kicked him on the floor.
He kicked him while he was pissed and hungover. Mm-hmm. And yet Daemon is here, and he obviously feels sorry for his brother.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't when you see him in the state that he's in?
And he's always been a good man, even if considered a weak man.
That's right. And I think he has that respect for him, and he has the respect for him for what he's done there to get to the throne, to help out him and Rhaenyra. You know, I actually really like Daemon this episode, but we'll get onto that a bit later. Vaemond here, after Viserys, is like, look, why the fuck are we talking about this?
Yeah.
I've told you, this is mental.
Yeah.
He loses it. Mm. He loses his head, in a way.
Proper.
I've said this in the hot take, but I watched it again, obviously. And the way that Daemon goads him into this is delicious. He's like, say it.
He's dying to do it, isn't he? He just wants to remove his head. Itching it.
Well, that's the thing, like... People have said, like, how can Daemon do this at court? Well, this is a bit different to when Sir Criston just beat someone to a bloody pulp at a wedding. Vaemond has done a treasonous act here, something that has been outlawed by the king, but also questioning the future queen. So beheading him is harsh, but totally fair in this situation.
He would have been executed for treason, so he just did it a bit quicker.
Yeah, he would have had his tongue removed at the bare minimum. I love the bit where Viserys gets up and gets the dagger, and he's like, I'll have your tongue for that. That was actually awesome. And then when Daemon goes, chops his head off and goes, you can keep your tongue, because he's actually just left his
little tongue
in his
still flopping out. Ugh.
I was like, fucking hell, that is amazing. You also see Aemon here get very excited.
Yeah.
He's loving a bit of violence.
He's loving a bit of Daemon, I think. I think he's thinking...
Well...
I don't know, either guys want to be him, other guys want to be with him, you know, that kind of thing.
Or kill him, you know?
Yes.
Or, you know...
All of the above.
The Daemon and Aemond rivalry is there to see just in visual terms, you know, look at them.
They're similar looking, yeah. He could be his son.
Like pure boar. They look like Targaryens. You know, they are the most Targaryen on this show, without a shadow of a doubt. So it's there to see. In the books, I've written here that Rhaenyra actually sends Daemon to kill Vaemond because of the slanders that have been written. And Daemon beheads him and then feeds his body to Rhaenyra's dragon, Syrax. So take that, dickhead.
Yeah. Waste not, want not.
You know what? You know, obviously they're saying the right things because obviously the kids are bastards. But it when you see that Jace and Lucaris are just nice kids, they're fucking good kids.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like,
also,
can you leave these kids alone?
I said this
please.
Before. Okay, they're bastards, but they are her children. And if she's the heir to the throne, then they're heirs to the throne. Really? Really
well, yeah,
and truly?
But you can't be if you're a bastard, but
well,
yes.
I mean...
As we know.
They couldn't have children because he was gay. So what was she supposed to do?
I'm not going to say you're wrong.
Which could have brought shame onto the Velaryon house anyway, Mr. Vaemon. So why don't you actually look ahead of yourself for like two steps and see the end game? But no,
yeah,
when you think about yourself.
It is stupid here that he thinks that his line is ended if Lucerys takes over the Driftwood throne. Because it's not. Baelor and Rhaena are there, and the twins, and they are Valyrian. They are Daemon and Laena's children. You can see they're Valyrian. You know, look at them. They are Valyrians. So it's absolutely ridiculous that he thinks that, you know, also, I've also said in my notes here, why is he being such a dick? He could just go marry someone and make more heirs, you know, more Valyrians.
Yeah.
What's his fucking problem?
Like Lord Corlys, anyway, Lord Corlys said, I want Luke to be my heir. That's that. Your opinion's actually not relevant, so fuck off. And he did. So good.
Mm. I've put here, you know, after that fantastic scene, Viserys obviously requests that all his family gather for a lovely dinner. What could go wrong? Hey?
Soup's cold.
The moment...
this is ruined.
Gazpacho. the moment Viserys comes in and removes his Phantom of the Opera mask.
Love the mask, by the way. Big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan of Phantom. Yeah. Love it.
He gives a very rousing speech with every fibre of his being that he had left to give. And I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. God bless him.
He sort of, for a brief moment in time, heals the realm and fixes all of the issues for a few minutes. And you get a sense that it might be okay. You know? he looks around the room. I mean, looks with his one eye or whatever, but he sees these events before him, like Helena's dancing with Jace and people are laughing at the table with each other and there's a bit of reconciliation and he's like, this is all I've ever wanted.
Yeah, he seems very content. And then Alicent just gets him removed. It's like, can you come and just remove him without his say-so?
Take him.
Just take him away.
Take him.
Lift him out of here.
I think we could talk about Viserys now, like, you know, in terms of Paddy's performance and like with the speech and everything.
Yes, he's been fantastic.
I'd be amazed if he doesn't get an Emmy next season, next year, because he has been, not just throughout this episode, but throughout this season, been fantastic. And it's baffling to me if he doesn't minimum get a nomination.
Yeah,
Because this performance was top notch.
Yeah.
It was honestly like, I know you talk about that hyperbolic tweet that you shared on the group where it was like, this is one of the best episodes of Game of Thrones content ever. And it's got one of the best performances I've ever seen.
No, he said the best Game of Thrones performance, which I don't agree
with. Okay, yeah. I don't think it's the best Game of Thrones performance that I've ever seen. However, I will say it is up there. It is a very good performance.
It's fantastic. It completely grounds the show. It completely gives you... he's just given him it's like a real person. He's given him humanity and character and someone to root for in this fucking dark world. He imbued so much personality and just warmth into the character. And John sent us a tweet, didn't he, of an interview with Paddy talking about how he was actually influenced by his mother when performing this role, because his mother was a very,
very sad.
Loved her family and was a very warm and caring person, but she suffered from diabetes, which eventually took her sight and her legs, which is absolutely awful. And he mentions the sort of seeing her succumb to this disease and to die like that, but without ever losing her warmth and her sense of humanity, and how he imbued that in Viserys. And reading that, seeing that, you think, yeah, I can definitely see that this has come from somewhere real, because that's probably why it's had such an impact on all of us. Like, whatever we think of the show, like, no one can put down his performance or critique it, because I just think he's really... I mean, I've been a fangirl of Viserys from the start, and yeah.
Yeah, he got a T-shirt and everything.
Really am. Hashtag... Team Viz. He really, really accomplished something special with the performance, and I think elevated the show, in my opinion. And we will never see his again.
And we will never see his like again. He has been the rock throughout the season, like I said earlier. And like, I think the show is going to have a huge hole to fill. We'll talk about it at the end of the episode, but... he was the character I actually cared about the most. Look, he's a very tragic character, like I said. Like, think about his life. He's trying to do something that's never been done before. He's trying to set a precedent.
Yeah.
He's trying to essentially just build a family that all gets along with each other. And he's a good man. And I said this in the hot take, like, we can't be mad at him for being a good man.
No.
You know, someone who, in his position, you don't usually see that. You know, you have ruthless kings. You have to have a ruthless streak about you, whether you're a kind king or not.
Or you see...
Whether even you're King Elessar, you know, or, you know, Elessar in Lord of the Rings or whatever. You know, you're not... You still got to have a ruthless edge.
Or if okay? you see... I think and, what was... Sorry, but the... most interesting thing about the portrayal, and it's the writing as well, is that I fully expected him to become under the sway of Alicent, like a Lady Macbeth type thing. She'd poison him, well, not literally, but get poison in his ear about naming Aegon as the heir, and he just never changed. He's just like, no, I love Rhaenyra. And I think in his heart he was like, she would actually be a good queen, so I'm not going to go against my gut feeling for someone I don't even know yet, because, you know, obviously before Aegon was born, then when Aegon is here, he is terrible. So why would he want him to be heir when he knows Rhaenyra and he knows what she's capable of, good and bad? But that was really good, because I was very much expecting him to just end up being like, no, I'm changing my mind, because wife got in his ear, and that never happened. He stayed true to the end, and I think that's really admirable. And I love him.
Definitely admirable. I am going to miss him a lot, but we'll talk about that in a minute. After it seems like he's healed the realm for all of those 2 minutes that I talked about, he gets dragged away from the dinner, as you have mentioned.
Just take
him. Get rid of him. Get him out of here.
Remove the king.
He's disgusting. Look at his face. Oh. For fuck's sake. And Aemon then gets up and gives... a very famous toast from the books, the Strong Boys toast. And this is just how I imagined it would be. Now, we've got a little bit of a division within the podcast. And that is that we're split on Aemon in a way. Now, I love him. I think this actor is...
you and intriguing. Gareth fancy him. You're like sexually attracted to him.
We're kind listening of sexually to the, attracted the hot to him, yeah.
take. Not that that's a problem. Striking, no, a striking fellow.
No. He is a striking fellow, but we're also just intrigued by him. We're genuinely like, this guy, he's got an aura. You know what I mean? And John is of the opinion that it's gone too far. I think his opinion is he's gone too... Gaz called him a Bond villain, and I think John has said... That that's the issue. It's gone too far that way. Where do you fall down on Aemon, Lucy?
My initial issue was just age-wise. Like, if you see him against Lucerys, it's like, that doesn't make sense with the last iterations, the last actors. But actually, I think Aemon, the casting, I've seen the guy in something else, a BBC drama called World on Fire, which also featured Friend of the Pod and Game of Thrones alumni Sean Bean. I think he's only 20 years old as well, actually, so he probably fits to the character of Aemon. But yeah, I think you immediately see that this guy, it's quite good because it's shorthand for the storytelling. We've missed, obviously, all of his life since he imprinted on Vhagar. But you really see how that boy turned into this man because of that dragon. Mm. Because if you kind of can gain control of Vhagar, no one can tell you shit. Like, no one's like... can do anything to you, and you can really see that trait in him, that he now kind of feels he's got nothing to prove and he's kind of untouchable. And to do that without really much dialogue, I actually thought was really good. He's definitely got an unsettling, malevolent presence, and I just thought, is he gonna fucking kill everyone in this room? Like, is he gonna kill these kids? He's just staring at Lucerys. I was like, oh fuck, what's gonna happen?
Well, obviously Luke took his eye.
Exactly. And you do have to say about that. I know he says, oh, it's fair exchange, I've got a dragon. It's like, there was no consequences for the children doing that. And I know he started it, but literally nothing happened to them for taking his eye.
Yeah.
Which is not great parenting.
Technically, the other kids started it, because all he did was claim a dragon, which is fair game,
He was throwing punches at the girls. Yeah. Come on. But no,
that is out of order,
I'm intrigued by him also, and I'm interested to see where he goes. And it kind of puts you on notice that, yeah, this is a character that's going to do something. And you know that anyway, really, because he's got Vhagar. But obviously, I have no idea. But in a way that's much different to Aegon, who is just seems like a one-note rapist, just a bit of a prick. Whereas, yep. Yeah, I thought, yeah, I'm intrigued by Eamon.
Well, he's serious opposition for Team Black, because obviously we've talked about this, the Greens and the Blacks and Team Green.
Yeah.
Have some formidable people on their team now. They've obviously got Sir Criston, who has beaten Damon already at a tourney. You've got Eamon, who has just beat Sir Criston. You see that in the yard early this episode.
Yeah, I mean, Criston swinging that fucking mace around. I was like, you could literally take his face off. Morning Star. Whatever. Yeah. But that's not something you train with, no? Like, with a person there. So I can take his other eye off and half his face. Sorry, carry on.
You shouldn't be training with that. Yeah, you shouldn't be training with those actual weapons.
No.
He's also riding Vhagar, obviously, Eamon, that you've talked about, who is essentially the largest dragon in the world. She is absolutely massive. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just trying to fuel the fire for this Damon and Eamon rivalry, because after he gives this strong speech, calling them strong boys, Jace hits him, and then they have to break up another fight. So the lovely peace of the realm is
shattered.
Over. And although you see Alicent and Rhaenyra hold each other's hands tenderly like they did as children, because there actually is a little bit of reconciliation there. You know, there genuinely is.
Definitely a softening of relations. Because I think with Alicent, and I think Rhaenyra recognises it, like she has cared for the king. Like you do get the impression that even if it's not love, like she does have a sense of duty. She has looked after him. Like I know there's rumours that she's poisoning him, but I do get that she cares about him. And, you know, Rhaenyra hasn't been there. She's not been there, but Alicent has. So that has to be kind of remembered. And yeah, it seemed like there was a thawing of relations. It seemed genuine to me and it was quite touching. And I thought, can't you just be friends again like you were when you were kids?
Yeah.
Can't they?
It's all brief. It's all brief because obviously what happens at the end of this episode is going to change the course of Westeros. And it's, I have a huge issue with Alicent and Rhaenyra sort of reconnecting here. It makes what's about to happen feel very unbelievable.
Your dog just came in.
Yeah. My horse.
Yes, your steed.
Listeners, it's a Great Dane. She just appeared behind me. So essentially my steed, yes. Mm. No, I have a problem with Alison and Rhaenyra reconnecting here because it doesn't feel right to me. At this point, it's full hatred. You know, like I talked about with the kids being named the same, Eamon losing his eye. Like, this is stuff that doesn't just get solved, you know?
Because we haven't seen any of the interim years. It's easier to forget that, which I think is a weakness of these time parts.
Imagine how much more it festers when they're apart from each other. You get what I mean?
Yeah, but they seemed, you know, like she was a bit sniffy with her, but generally, like, Rhaenyra's speech seemed genuine, and so did Alicent's.
Yeah, no, look, I'm not criticising the performance or anything. I just, from my perspective, I think it's going to seem like a bit of a fucking 180 in a minute, right? So just get ready. So this is the last scene is Viserys near death. I've written in his bed after a fantastic performance from Paddy all episode. Starts muttering. Or spewing parts of Aegon the Conqueror's dream, A Song of Ice and Fire, to Alicent, mistaking her for Rhaenyra. And Alicent interprets it to mean her son, Aegon, is the prince that was promised.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have issue. This is the only part of the episode, really, really genuinely, like this last scene, where I'm like, I really don't like it.
Interesting.
Because, and we've talked about this already, can you stop fucking talking about A Song of Ice and Fire, please?
Never.
Can you stop saying it? Can you stop saying it? Right?
No.
It just feels so heavy-handed. But also, there's a couple of things at play here. Now, I'm going to ask you this question, because this to me is open to interpretation. What I've read there is not necessarily the interpretation of what Alicent believes. Do you think that Alicent now believes Aegon is the prince that was promised because of this sort of disjointed prophecy that he's just recounted to her? Or do you think that she thinks that Viserys chose Rhaenyra because of this weird dragon prophecy that she doesn't believe in? So therefore, she's definitely going to assert Aegon as heir. Which one do you think it is?
I think it could be a third option. Presumably, ooh, she doesn't know. She doesn't know the prophecy, does she? She's not aware of it.
No, but that's the first time she's heard anything.
I think
to do
she's
with it.
Just so what he says, it doesn't make a lot of sense. We've obviously heard that stupid phrase "Song of Ice and Fire" a few times in the season, so we know what it means. I think she's just thinking he has changed his mind and is just saying Aegon, and she's going, I'm not going to think too much about that. I'm going to run with it. I think she's just going to take advantage of the fact that he said the word Aegon before he died. I don't think it's much deeper than that, because there's not really any way she could get much sense out of what he said without having any prior knowledge of the prophecy.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of things here that way makes it seem like I can accept it. Maybe.
Mm.
My big issue is, and I will be fascinated to know in the next episode, because if she walks up to like Otto and says, he told me about this prophecy, yeah, and Aegon has to be on the throne or something along those lines, I'm going to lose my mind. Because there is no way that this is a motivating factor for the Greens. Yeah?
Yeah.
And their pursuit to put Aegon on the throne. Because it would go so far against my interpretation, and I think a lot of readers' interpretations of the books, that it's just ridiculous. You know, you even see Alicent here with the seven-pointed star and this whole idea that she's bringing the new gods into the Red Keep, which is a huge issue. Obviously, Daemon and Rhaenyra take issue with it. But the Hightowers are obviously massively aligned to the new gods. They wouldn't believe, you know, some old god dream, some Valyrian god prophecy. So there's no way she would believe anything like this. The thing that I said to Gareth in the hot take was she's looking for anything to justify putting Aegon on the throne.
That's how I read it, is that he said some garbled shit, Aegon's name has come up, and she's like, right, that's that then.
Him again?
Yeah.
which one again?
So I think that's where it comes from. I don't think it's it, because as you say, like, I hadn't thought of it like that, because obviously having not read the books, everyone's motivations are maybe not as clear to me. But yeah, the idea of the Greens being like, yeah, we've got to make this prophecy come true, doesn't really make any sense. I think she's opportunistic, and she's, you know, she has heard what he said. She's heard her son's name, and she thinks, right, now that he's completely lost sense of his faculties and he's saying this, I'll take this as written, and this is gospel, and now my son has to be king.
Yeah, and we're going to see how that unfolds next week, because we assume Viserys is dead here at the end of the episode, yeah?
Fade to black. No, he's back again. No, I think he's dead.
Yeah. It's very sweet that he sort of says, my love, and he's talking about Emma, obviously. Yeah. He obviously died in the first episode. I thought that was very tender, and I think that wraps a fantastic season from Paddy.
Yeah.
Who
MVP.
In this episode was MVP, and in the season, I think, will go down as MVP.
For sure.
I don't think there's any, you know, the one thing that the time jumps have allowed is for the actors who have stayed the same to really stand out, and he has been one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, well done, Paddy.
Well done to you, sir.
You may now rest. Yeah? Rest.
You've earned it.
Little Paddy, rest. You bloody have earned it. All right, Luce, that's the end of the episode. So we're going to quickly move on to some feedback.
Yeah.
And then we'll get some rest ahead of what is going to be, you know, fucking mental two episodes, I reckon. Of course, you can write into us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. You can interact with us on social media channels. Also, it's fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. We have gone a little bit over. Just two of us. We've almost gone over time. Unbelievable.
Always happens.
But we've got some... Always happens. We've got some feedback from Christopher, who has said he's our resident title section viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Because As you know, listeners, we've talked about this. Sometimes I skip the titles these days because it annoys me.
I always skip it. They use the same music. So Christopher watches it, so we don't have to. So I rate you for that, Christopher. Thank you for your service.
Cheers, mate. Yeah. He says more bloodlines drawn in the opening sequence from Daemon and Rhaenyra to their two new children. And Aegon's kids with Helena. I know you've been skipping the intro.
So yeah, maybe I would have known that had I bothered to watch it. But, you know, time is money. So
it sounds like we're lazy, but I will tell you, I genuinely am still annoyed, okay, about the music.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it.
Okay. I love the music of Game of Thrones, but I just wanted something new, and it really frustrates me. Jason has been in touch on email. Thank you very much. And said, I've read Fire and Blood and I'm obsessed with all the main novels. I'm a huge fan of Dawn and I'm desperate for Gurm to finish The Winds of Winter, as we all are, of course. I'm glad your podcast has people who've read the books and can provide excellent nuanced analysis. Yeah, so the nuance comes from me.
So what about the others? What do we provide?
Yeah, that's right. No, Lucy's staying unsullied with the books, because not with the books. She's obviously read Song of Ice and Fire multiple times, but she's staying unsullied with Fire and Blood because we've decided that for this podcast, having a mixture of me, John and Emma, who have read the books, and Lucy and Gaz, who haven't read the books, makes for some very interesting analysis, yeah, in my opinion.
I'm the mouthpiece for the common man who doesn't always understand things,
right,
or know who people's
that's
names
right
are, but, you know, who tries, okay? There are dozens of us. And I stand for
there
you.
Are. There's a lot of people out there. To be fair, there's fucking loads of people who haven't read Fire and Blood, because I guarantee to you, people pick it up, right? People will go to the shop and they'll pick up Fire and Blood and they'll go, oh yeah, this is going to be good. This is going to be good. That show was really good. Yeah. This is going to be really interesting. They're going to have to read about 300 pages before they even get to A Dance of Dragons.
Skip ahead.
And and before they get there, they're just going to be like, and then this Targaryen ruled at Dragonstone for 5 years. Then he went on a ship. Then he did this. It's just like, it's just, you know, some of it is dry.
Shit.
Okay. So some people are going to read it and they're going to be like, what the fuck is this? So in a way, pretty much a lot of the listeners will be like you, Lucy. Jason's gone to say, one thing I'm curious to get your thoughts on is the whole incest thing. Like, I get that you'll find it disgusting given our social normal societal norms and legal stuff, but I guess I just don't find it a huge deal because this is a totally fictional world and it's the Targaryens. In the world that Gurm has created, this is perfectly acceptable and what they've been doing for over 100 years. Aegon married both of his sisters, Jaehaerys married Alysanne, so forth and so on. I'm not sure why we've got so much venom when we discuss the incest thing.
Jason, I would say it's not so much the incest, it's more the grooming when we're talking about Daemon and Rhaenyrus and the fact that he kind of targeted her from a young age.
That is
age.
True.
And the actresses themselves have mentioned it as grooming. That's what makes me uncomfortable, because I could watch Jaime and Cersei and just think, yeah, they love each other, big deal. And their brother and sister. Whereas it's the fact that he, yeah, groomed her from a young age, which makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I will say that in this world, being groomed at a young age, in this fictional world, is completely par for the course. You know, you have wives who are sometimes 6 or 7
but
years
that
old.
That doesn't mean that we have to go, well, it was fine at the time. It's not a real time. It doesn't exist.
No, and I know.
It's hard not to watch it with your modern day morals. And yeah, underage-ness of it all.
I think my biggest issue with it is, and I've got no issue with it in terms of the actual story, because if anything, I'm actually a Targaryen incest shipper. I actually really like, I like Rhaenyra and Daemon together in the book. I like Jon and Dany. I like the idea that is okay. It sits fine with me. Okay. I actually don't even mind Aegon marrying his sisters,
you
know, because it's quite a cool, story. They dominate, you know, Westeros with the dragons. My big issue, and I think John's issue, and I think a lot of our issues that they were talking about last week, is just how people on Twitter are like talking about these incestuous moments so fucking tenderly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're like, it's just so romantic. It's like, come on, guys, it's not fucking romantic. It's just, it's it's cool that they're together.
An uncle is fucking his niece. He's much younger.
We don't have to ham it up. We just don't have to ham it up on Twitter. That's what we're saying. We're not saying that we disagree with it in the fictional world, because we all agree with it. I think we'd all say it makes perfect sense, especially from a Targaryen lineage point of view. But I think it's the Twitter and the social media reaction, you know, fan sites and that sort of stuff. It's just a bit much, isn't it? That's my biggest issue with it. He also said he's shipping Harwin and Rhaenyra. I know it's dumb, but their interaction with the kids in episode 6 absolutely broke my heart. And I agree, Harwin was fucking cool and obviously dead too
early. I would have liked to have seen more of him rather than him just being like the perfect man in one episode and then dying.
Yeah, yeah. I would have definitely liked to see more of him as well. He says, great job on the podcast. He's subscribed and will listen to the end of House of the Dragon, which hopefully won't be for many years. And I don't think it will be. I think it will be 4 seasons, potentially, loose. So... okay.
We'll see. We'll see.
May the reign of the Targaryens continue for many unabated. More years to come. Yeah, I mean, look, it's about to kick off, isn't it? We've just had the prologue, basically, because right now, shit is going to go down next week. And I cannot wait to be joined by you, of course, Lucy, and more of the fan critical group, who obviously could not be here today. You know, one of Bronze John, Lady Emma, and little Sir Gareth when he gets back from Dawn. Will be
here.
Have
you just knighted Gareth? You just called him
no.
Sir Gareth.
Oh,
congratulations, Gaz, on your ascension tonight.
No.
Can't take that back. Don't edit that out. I'll tell him. I'm going
to
tell him.
This is a point of contention that we will have to address. That is a Freudian slip of the tongue.
I mean, he's done nearly the whole season as your cupbearer. I think you can promote him tonight.
Yeah. Remove my tongue. Viserys, cut my tongue out and don't let me ever speak those words again. No, Luce, we will discuss this with that person we just talked about. I can't say my cupbearer. We'll talk about that next week. Anyway, Lucy, thank you for joining
me. Thank you, Len.
To talk about this episode. I think we've successfully deep dived it. And as I said, next week's going to be hectic. So please do tune in for our hot take and, of course, our deep dive. Share the podcast, go to patreon.com/fancritical. Let us know your thoughts, email fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. And thank you so much for listening. We will return next week for episode 9, which has already got a title, Lucy. It's called The Green Council.
Ooh.
So make of that
what, does that
what you
mean?
Will. I mean, shit's going to go down. Anyway, thanks, Luce. Thanks, lovely
thank
listeners.
You,
we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.